Larry Burkett has a radio program in which he deals with managing your money, Christian financial concept. He says that one of the major reasons for divorce in our country is young people mishandling their money. There are also people in the spiritual warfare realm who say that demons are the reason why we have as many conflicts between ourselves as we do. There are others who are in the counseling thing that say sexual maladjustment is one of the main reasons for divorce. You know what I've learned from all of that? That everybody's specialty is the reason why everybody's going wrong. And I was interested today in our study in the book of James. We're in chapter 4 tonight. You might be thankful for that. James seems to zero in on a root cause for conflict and so forth. Basically, it has to do with the conflicts that are within us, internal conflicts. We've actually been studying in the book of James for 60 studies. In those studies, we've seen that James had a powerful burden to make it possible for believers to effectively combat temptation on every level so that they might be able to inherit well in the kingdom of God. All those who correctly see that eternity looms over time and see that eternity has as much more significance than time as the universe has over this speck of dust that we walk on, this burden exists because the kingdom is forever. Time is only for a little while. And resisting temptation is a very real necessity because we live in a cause and effect universe, and when we succumb, we plant seeds that will come back upon us. So we have been looking through the book of James at James's treatment of this matter of enduring temptation and dealing with it properly, and we have completed our consideration of two of the critical areas. Chapter 2 dealt with one area and chapter 3 another. Temptation exercises a significant pull in three different directions. We saw in chapter 2 that there is a temptation to seek wealth as a basis for security, and there is no security in wealth. You can't buy security with money. It appears that you can on some occasions. The thought went through my mind, you know, when they sent our Marines over into Africa, in Mogadishu, you could hire a truckload of renegades with a machine gun mounted on the top of it for a couple hundred dollars a day or something like that, and they would protect you. I guess that's called buying security, but you really weren't secure. You're not any more secure than the will of God, because He determines what's going to happen in your life. And money doesn't influence Him. And then, secondly, in chapter 3, we saw that there is a significant appeal, that visible position at the leadership level of people, and particularly in the Church of Jesus Christ, for believers, seems to have a fairly strong appeal to some people. And we've spent enough time working through both of those. This evening, we're going to begin our consideration of the third critical area. It's the area that has to do with pleasures and the appeal that pleasure has, the pressure that pain creates. I wanted to begin our study this evening. Most of you have been through this trilogy of things with me enough times that you're aware. The temptation in Genesis 3 and the temptation of Christ as it's recorded in Luke 4 and Matthew 4 give us three basic categories of temptation. John summarized them in 1 John 2 as the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life. But he didn't elaborate a whole lot. He expected that we would get our understanding of temptation from the temptation account. The Abrahamic covenant given to us in Genesis chapter 12 comes with three significant promises, and lo and behold, they address the areas of weakness or susceptibility that people are faced with. And so God's promise to Abraham of land and a seed and a great name fit right in with the temptation, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life. So James actually structured his book, which is a book about temptation. Starts in chapter 1 and goes all the way through chapter 5, and in the beginning and in the end, he's talking about enduring these difficult things. And in chapters 2, 3, and 4, he actually takes the categories and develops them. So we've looked at the temptation philosophically as materialism in chapter 2. Materialism is basically the philosophy that a man is a material being and that he will get his greatest amount of satisfaction in life from being secure by the accumulation of material possessions and enough money to be able to sleep at night and not worry about anything. That's a philosophy that has its roots in man's desire to be secure in an insecure world. The second area was chapter 3, which had to do with man's status lust, his desire to be exalted in the eyes of his compadres. And philosophically, that's the doctrine or the concept of humanism, which teaches that man is a little god and can become a more adept and skillful god as he applies himself to, particularly in our generation, the New Age Eastern mystical religions and some of the old cult religions in our own country that teach that men are on their way to becoming gods. And of course, that is a highly significant philosophy in a world where people lust after acceptance and control and power, and humanism gives them the foundation for doing that. I mean, after all, if you're a god, you're significant. Of course, they wouldn't have liked Tony Evans' sermon on the radio today because he was talking about the equivalence between us and roaches and worms. Humanists wouldn't like those analogies at all, but anyway, that's the appeal to significance and status, and the great fear there is that we'll be rejected. This evening we're going to start in chapter 4, which has to do with hedonism, and actually the Greek word that's translated in verse 1, the pleasures in the New American Standard, the pleasures that wage war in your members. King James have a different word. Desires. That word is actually the Greek word hedonos, and we get our word hedonism from it. And basically, it's just a word that refers to the appeal that is very strong upon us because of our desire to be involved in pleasure and escape pain. And when you stop and think about it, those are very basic motivators. And we use the issues of pleasure and pain, quite frankly, very widely in our culture to motivate people. In fact, the reward principle is a very strong one. And we just use this whole idea of the threat of punishment is the pain principle and the promise of reward is the pleasure principle. And we use it to motivate. It's called the carrot on the stick is the pleasure one, and the whip on the rear is the pain one. You get the horse to go either way. But the whole point is everybody recognizes what a powerful motivator that is. And it's true even for us because we will do what we have to do to get out of feeling pain if we can. And we will do what we have to do to enjoy the pleasures of the physical realm in as much as we can. And so we are already aware of the fact that we are physical people who are highly motivated by the pain-pleasure issues, and these are physical things. Before I get off of those three, let me just say this. In 1 John, John also introduced the reality that believers have one other primary motivator, and that's the love of God, which means that believers, because they're given the Spirit of God and they become the children of God and they're born into the family of God, automatically have a desire to please God built right in, because the essence of the new covenant is the Spirit of God writing upon our hearts the will of God so that we'll do it. And one of the first things the Spirit of God writes upon the heart of a brand new believer is the desire to please his Father. Now, there are other desires that compete with that desire, but nonetheless, that's written right in there. And we need to keep that in mind, because we have a desire for pleasure, we have a desire for status, and we have a desire for security, but we also have a desire to please our Father. And sometimes these desires become mutually exclusive. We'll talk about that in just a moment. I want you to notice, though, that in James 4, when James starts out this fourth chapter, he just raises this question: what's the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? Or King James says wars and fightings, wars and fights. It's on the heels, of course, of verse 18, chapter 3, where the seed of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. And of course, the whole issue of peace brings on the question of conflicts and quarrels and strife and all that kind of thing. But James just lays it at the door of the pleasures, the hedonisms that wage war in your body, in your members. I find that very interesting. James is actually attributing a great deal of the conflict that exists to physical pain pleasure issues. Now, I do want to say this about the interaction of the motivations of ungodliness as well as God's love. James says pointedly that we have these pleasures that wage war in our members. These are competing desires within. And this is key. I want you to be aware of this. Larry Burkett is mistaken when he says that, I'm not saying he's not following solid research in that, but he's mistaken when he says that young people get divorced because of money issues. That's not true. They get divorced because of greed issues. Money issues are simply a side product of too many wants and not enough stuff to get them. I'm going to get on a hobby horse just a minute. I heard yesterday this fella call into us some deal, and he was saying that he was an assistant pastor and his church was only paying him $25,000 a year. Of course, they were supplying him with a house. But he had a $400 a month education bill to pay off. And so it was very difficult for him to be able to juggle and pay his bills and do his tithe and all that kind of stuff on $25,000 a year. And of course, I don't have a whole lot of sympathy for that for several reasons. But one of the primary ones is that I think that in our culture, we're so committed to having what we want now and paying for it later that we don't even care how deeply in debt we get. This young man obviously wanted to get through school worse than he wanted to stay out of debt, and now he wishes he was out of debt. I'll guarantee you that he could have gotten through school and probably maybe taken him a couple of years longer, but he could have gotten through school without incurring any of that debt if he'd have been committed to not going into debt. Well, in the area of competing desires, this happens at the external level. We started this off talking about why people get divorces and stuff, but the reason is because there are two people who want different things, and they want them badly enough that they'll sacrifice the unity between them in order to get them. But that's not the worst problem. The worst problem is it's going inside of us. And I want you to think about that. You have a fairly strong, driven desire to be secure because the whole area of fears is a powerful thing, negative. And most everybody wants to have a sense of security. You have a fairly strong and powerful desire to be somebody in the eyes of somebody. So you want to be significant, and your fear in this area, of course, is of being rejected and being treated like you're a scumbag or something worse. It's a very powerful motivation, and I can prove that to you by just saying something slighting about you, and you'll be mad at me just like that. And just because I said something slighting about you, it wouldn't even have bothered you if you hadn't been interested in having me have a good opinion of you, which is a desire for significance. And then the whole issue of satisfaction, which is this area of hedonism or satisfaction of the issue of pleasure and escape from pain. And then, of course, we add in here the factor of the love of God, which has been written upon our hearts by the Spirit, so that we are not free as the children of God from the longing to do the will of God. But we don't always do the will of God. In fact, some of us very seldom do the will of God. But it's not because we don't want to. It's because there are other wants we want worse than that. And the problem, as James sees it here in verse 1, is that there is a whole host of desires, of competing wishes. We're going to call them lust, because a powerful desire is a lust, and it's not always bad. In chapter 4, it says that God lusts for the Spirit that He's made to dwell within us. Uses that word. It's not bad always. But the point is, strong desires create havoc within us. Let me see if I can illustrate it. In our culture, some years ago, before the drug culture really got going and before all the spokespeople, but even now, people that are involved in drug addiction and that kind of thing typically realize that they're looked down upon by all the non-druggies. They assume that that's going to be the case, and yet they keep on doing their drugs. Why? Why do they do that? They prefer the pleasure at the physical level over the status that they would have if they would give them up. There are people who will actually ruin their health working at a fairly driving type of job, or maybe they take on two or three jobs even, and they'll ruin their health to accumulate material wealth. Why do they do that? Because they want to be secure more than they want to be healthy. There are all kinds of these kinds of contradictions that go on. We look at somebody and we see them doing something that we wouldn't do, and we say, how stupid of them. Why do they do that? But if you just step back a little bit, you can see why they do it. Because there is something in here that they've made their decision about what they really want to settle into. Now, I can understand this pleasures business. I've mentioned to you before, when I was in the hospital with those nerve problems, they pumped me full of, was it Valium? I don't remember, but it was some kind of high-powered narcotic. It was designed in one half a day to relieve pressure that had been building in my nerve right back here for several months. And it was in such bad shape that the initial shot didn't work, so they gave me another, and that didn't work, so they gave me another. And well, the next morning when I woke up, I had died and gone to heaven. I felt so good. That's hedonism to the maximum, and I understood that morning why people are drug addicts. I knew. Because it does feel really good. I mean, it scared me, because I realized, you know, you can be seduced by that kind of super feeling. You just want to have it again. Well, that's the making of a drug addict. And in a little while, he couldn't stop himself if he wanted to. But he's driven by the pain and pleasure sensor things. Other people have problems in these other areas. But this evening, the real focus is here in this area. And James freely acknowledges that we have these multiple competing things going on within us, and he knows that it often creates tremendous stress in our lives, not because they're there, but because they are what we call mutually exclusive. You know when you feel stress? It's when there are two things demanding your time and you can't do them both. Then suddenly you have to make a choice. And the choice that you're making, you don't like, because you want both. And the stress builds because you don't want to have to make that choice. Or having made it, you don't want to have to live with it. But that's where the stress comes from. And that's the kind of tension that James is dealing with in verse 1 when he talks about the pleasures that wage war in your members. He actually uses a word that is translated in some places, soldiering, or using soldiers. And he's talking about trying to vanquish an enemy. And all of these desires have the same objective, to vanquish the enemy. Well, what's the enemy? The other desires. You want to be wealthy, but the skills that you have mean the only way you can do that is if you really push yourself, working 16, 18-hour days. So you push yourself. Well, in a little while, your body can't take that, so it begins to complain. And the longer you do it, the more it complains. And in a little while, your body is screaming at you, but you still want this. And the reason your body is screaming at you is because it wants to vanquish this other love you have. It wants to make itself more valuable to you than this thing over here. And on it goes. This happens in multiple places in your internal makeup. Now, there is a solution to that. It's not an easy one, but it is an effective one, and it does work. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. But I want you to get a feel for what's really going on. What's going on inside is that there are multiple... If I were an artist, I'd draw little castles, you know, with the parapets on the side and draw a bridge. Inside of you, there are these multiple little kingdoms. And every one of them wants to be the ruler of the whole world. Your whole world. So you have this little king and he wants to rule the world, and this one wants to rule the world, and this one, and there are multiple others, and they're all aggressively pressing you to choose them above all the rest. Let me go back to my illustration of the hospital stuff. I'm going to really be good at this when I'm a couple decades older, when somebody comes and wants to talk about how I feel. I'm practicing now. But I had pulled something in my on my right side when I was working under an old mobile home one time, and I felt it give, but it didn't hurt at the time. And then I went about doing my wood cutting for the winter, cutting up 10 or 12 cords of wood and splitting it and all that kind of stuff. Well, I'm right-handed, so I was constantly using this side of my back more than this side. And over time, these muscles began to squeeze to the point that there was a nerve center there that was just beginning to scream. Well, I put up with it because I had things to do, and I didn't want to go to the doctor. Certainly didn't want to spend the money. Well, we got into this wintertime cycle, and I had 4 funerals in 5 weeks, or 5 funerals in 4 weeks, and the tension of that built up, and then I slipped and fell on the ice and jolted my back real bad when I caught myself, and I fell off a ladder. All this happened within, you know, and it kept working on this side of my body until one Friday, I could hardly stand it. I'd been to the doctor and gotten all these shots and all this stuff, and it didn't work. And I put one of these neck-stretching things up over the door. I couldn't lay down. I couldn't sleep. And I was pulling on the rope, trying to pull the pain out. And by the next morning, I had to go to the hospital emergency room. And the only way I could bear it was to have my head right between my knees, bent over as far as I could bend, to pull. And when the doctor saw it, he said something about, "We got to get this guy some Valium or whatever drug he was going to use." And I said, "Oh, you're going to start messing with my mind." He said, "Do you have a problem with that?" And I said, "Not now. Give me the shot." Well, my point is simply, these little kings have their ways of trying to make you, force you, to choose for them over the others. And the pressure can get to be quite severe. And, of course, that's just a microcosm within you of what happens outside of you. I mean, martyrdom is the final resistance to the pressure of somebody who wants to make you do something they want you to do that you will not do. And the pain of, you know, whatever methods of torture that they make use of, that all designed to force you to choose their agenda over whatever agenda you're considering. And James says that's going on inside. And because it's going on inside, notice what happens in verse 1. It comes outside. He says the source of the word quarrels is the word for intense life and death struggle type fighting. The word that's translated quarrels is the word that's used of a soldier who's gone into battle with his weapons, and it's kill or be killed. It's the word that's used when the two prophets in the book of Revelation face the Antichrist, and it's to the death, and of course they die. Who is able to make war with him is the world's cry after he kills them, and that's the word that's used. It means intense, life and death struggle type of things. Where does this come from? What about the conflict? That word is a lesser word. It simply means the irritations and the conflicts that come up because of them, and it can be small or great. But what James is actually asking in the first part of the verse is, where does this whole issue of conflict come from? Where do you get this kind of intensity that would actually make you kill somebody else to get your agenda over? Or what would make them want to kill you to get their agenda instead of yours accomplished? And where do all of these other irritating conflicts come from? That's his question. And his answer is, the source, is it not your pleasures, your hedonistic commitment that wages war inside of you? So basically what he's saying is that the external relational issues are actually nothing more or less than a mirror of what's going on inside. That's the reason why it's so necessary in verse 18 of chapter 3 to put a focus on establishing and maintaining peace, because only if a person can be at peace within himself, and I don't mean that in a New Age way, but the only way a person can be at peace with other people is if he's already at peace within. And the only way you can be at peace within is if you've got the things that are critical figured out. Because peace with God is the first and most fundamental demand of the universe as God created it. And without that peace, there is no peace. There is simply a web of manipulation where people try to act certain ways toward each other, but always manipulating, trying to get what they want done, done. Always. And it's only the love of God that breaks that whole cycle. Because once a person becomes at peace with God, his need for peace is met. And therefore, he doesn't have a big need to push his agenda on anybody else. And that enables him to be a peaceful kind of person, because he's not pressing his agenda on everybody else. Now, you have to keep in mind that God also has an agenda. And the children of God adapt and adopt his agenda if they're willing to deal with these internal conflicts in the proper way. So sometimes the children of God will find themselves in conflict with the world because they do have a divine agenda that they must pursue. And the world often will not allow that to be done without opposition. So there's going to be some conflict. But there's a whole lot less if the person's at peace within in his relationships with other people. So the big question really is, well, how do you deal with the internal hedonisms, these internal commitments to satisfaction of our own pleasures and desires? James argues that external conflict is the fruit of the root of internal conflict, and fundamentally at the physical level. Therefore, James is saying that the problem is in the body, Now, we're about out of time, and I do want to answer the question, how do you deal with it? But I want you to be aware of the fact that the Scriptures acknowledge the fact that the problem is in the body. The Bible talks about us as being redeemed. We sing the song, redeemed, how I love to proclaim it, redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. Well, in some senses that's true, but our redemption is not complete until the resurrection of the body. There's something at the physical level that has to be dealt with. And technically, even the virgin birth argues that there's something wrong in the human body. I believe that when Adam ate the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, that it affected his physical body and he passed it on. It's built right into the genetics. But having said that, there is a solution. You know how the philosophers of old handled the evil body's problem? Two ways, asceticism and Epicureanism. An ascetic was a guy who would climb up on a pole and live up there for 30 years to have people throw him his food and that kind of thing, and he would torture his body thinking that he could beat it into submission. And it didn't work, of course. Oh, he might have dominated his body, but he didn't get any more godly. Just got real proud of the way he dominated his body. The Epicureans, on the other hand, said the best way to handle the appetites of the body is to sate them. Fill them up, and then they won't dominate you. And then everybody realizes that there's some truth to that. I mean, if you're really thirsty and you go in and drink a gallon of water, you don't want any more water. So there's some truth to that. But that's really not the biblical solution to the issues of the conflicts that are within. What is the real solution? It's all the way back over into chapter 1. You remember when James was dealing with the issue of dealing with the problems that were creating stress? He said in verse 8 that a double-minded man was unstable in all his ways. So what's a double-minded man? Well, he's a man who can't make up his mind which one of these kings he wants to be the real one. That's a double-minded man. Today, the double-minded man wants this particular little tyrant to be the boss. And tomorrow, having lived with the consequences of this idiot's decisions, he decides, no, I don't want him to be the boss. I want this one to be the boss. And so he lives a couple of days under the results of this idiot's decisions. And then he decides, you know, both of those guys have got it. I need a different boss. So he goes over here, and then he goes over the next one, and then he comes back and says, maybe I didn't give this one enough of a chance. And what ends up happening is that he won't make up his mind. And as a result, he cannot get rid of the conflict. He is double-minded. He's unstable in all his ways. Well, how do you get out of that? Well, you decide which one of these you're going to really go for. Everybody does. The drug addict decides he's going to go for this one. The materialist decides he's going to go for the money. The status seeker decides he's going to go for the position in front of everybody. You know, politicians, by and large, are afflicted a great deal with this particular problem because they want to be in control and up front and in front of people. Preachers have the same problem. All right? But the point is, you won't find any real satisfaction in making these decisions. The child of God has got to decide at this point that he is going to do what his Father wants him to do, regardless of what it costs him. Yeah.
You know, just what you're talking about there, exactly what's going on in the world today, but we call it striving for success, and we're beating ourselves into the ground.
Yeah. We all define success in our own little way, so we just beat ourselves and each other up in the process. But a believer who has already made up his mind, I'm going to do what the Father wants me to do, when his body sends its little tyrant over to complain about things, he'll just say, the boss has already said what we're going to do in this case, and it's not what you want done, so just shut up and we're going to go with it. And he says, well, I won't shut up. And he says, I'm still not going to listen to you. And you just keep on doing what you know is right. Now, sometimes, many times, the will of God will allow you to deal with that. I mean, if you have a headache, it's not outside the will of God to take an Excedrin. That way you can go ahead and do what you need to do and deal with the pain that your body is complaining about. But I'd caution you on that, because taking Excedrin is just one step in saying, well, I can use drugs to handle the problems my body's giving me. Be careful with that. If you get committed to solving the problems that way, you may end up sliding off into that. The issue is not solving the problems that way, but solving the problem by deciding whose will are you going to do. And for the believer, there's only one solution that will bring peace, and that's the decision to do the will of the Father. Because He won't give you any peace if you don't decide that. And He's bigger than you. He's bigger than all these other little tyrants, too. So the believer only has, if I can say it this kind of a blasphemous way to say it, but it's, the believer only has one real option. He's got to go with the God who bought him, who owns him, who has the right to say what's going to be done here. So as we go into chapter 4, you're going to discover that these believers, they tried things, you know, they tried the God thing. Oh, let's pray about it. Yeah, he said, you pray and you ask and you don't receive. I wanted to start out this evening and just make you aware of the fact that James is dealing here with physical level temptation, but he's dealing with it on the internal conflict basis. He wants us to get our act together internally, because then we'll be able to get along with each other externally. Okay, we're out of time, but if you've got a question or comment you'd like to make, we'll take time for you to make it or ask.